Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 160, recorded April 30th, 2013.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hula Vinaka.
Does anybody know which one that is?
I language? Know.
Go ahead.
We knows!
Okay, you better tell them.
Okay, that's Fijian.
Yeah, and it's the greeting.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. It doesn't mean anything else. It just means hi.
Well, I thought it meant something to do with good health or something, but I don't remember.
I have no idea. I don't remember.
But it is a greeting anyway, yeah. Used in Fiji.
So that works.
Okay.
Alrighty. So we're so sorry we missed last week.
Yeah, we've had all sorts of things going on.
My goodness. A couple doozies of week. We're still in the middle of a doozy.
Yeah,
it's,
we are.
It seems like it's a little just keeps getting doozier.
And you may notice the decrease in sound quality this week. That is due to the fact...
No, that was actually due to the fact that in honor of that one guy that one time, we decided to record in the shower today.
Well, no, I can't sit up in a chair right now because my back is in too much pain to do that, to sit up in a chair that long. So we're recording with my iPad instead.
So he can lay down.
Yes, but we won't go too much into my back problems. We'll just forge on. And next week we'll have our microphones back, hopefully.
Yes.
Okay.
Hopefully we'll have your back.
Yes, that's even more important. Mm-hmm.
So today we have Gabriel in the Bay Area in California.
New contributor.
Very good. And Kelly in Shrewsbury, UK. And Michael from YouTube and Tom in Provo.
Yep. Good lineup. And mm-hmm. Kelly is a fairly new contributor, and Michael is also a new contributor, I think.
Oh, great. So all kinds of newness all over the place.
And in fairness, I don't know if it's Gabriel in the Bay Area or Gabriel. I don't know. So
oh,
he'll
no,
have to
I don't know. Sorry. I was just reading it written.
One.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. Okay.
Okay, so Gabriel says, first and foremost, I would like to thank you for creating such an interesting podcast. I just stumbled upon it a couple of weeks ago and have listened to more episodes than I would care to admit.
I just got to say, I love it when people say that.
I know.
That means we must be doing something.
We like that. That's great. Yeah. Thank you.
Welcome officially, Gabriel, as an Aquarimaxer.
He says, ever since the tender age of 10, I have raised fish in some capacity or another. However, the past 7 years, I took a break from the hobby, but have recently dove back in. The other day, I was listening to one of your episodes, and Russ mentioned that hobbyists are tinkers at heart. I fully agree with his statement and came up with a pretty cool trick to help with pH, KH, and GH.
I love this. This is pretty innovative.
I live here in the Bay Area near San Francisco, California, and my tap water is disgustingly hard. Even if I let the water sit for 48 hours, it's testing at an 8.4 pH, 15 KH, and 16 GH. Okay. For the chemically challenged like myself, I know you tell me this every single time, but I kind of have a handle on what pH is, but what's KH and GH?
Okay. Well, GH stands for general hardness, and KH is carbonate hardness.
Okay, that's good. Let's carry on.
Okay. Okay.
I'm sorry, guys.
It's okay. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I should add that I'm into high-tech planted tanks and really want soft water conditions. There's only one mainstream method available to hit ideal water conditions for my preference, and that's RO. Well, I found another solution that works swimmingly. Attached is a picture of my double Brita filtration PVC pipe water purifier. It's perfect. I hook it directly up to the tap, and voila! My pH is 6.6, KH 5, GH6, and the water comes out sans chlorine. Did you like how I said sans?
I kind of did, yeah.
That sounds kind of awful, huh? That's okay. Sorry, Juliet. No additives, no mixing RO with tap, and best of all, no need to add a dechlorinator. This may not work for everyone, but I figured I'd share my findings. If you have any questions or want me to go in a bit more detail with how this all works, I would gladly.
Yeah, I love this. This sounds like a good idea. My understanding is that a Brita filter basically has two things in it. In terms of what it uses to treat the water.
Mm-hmm.
It's got activated carbon, but it's also got ion exchange resin, and that's probably what's doing, having these effects on the water.
And is this is something different than just a normal Brita filter?
No, this is a normal Brita filter. What he's done is developed a pH, I don't know where that came from.
I do.
He's developed PVC pipe. He's developed a PVC pipe structure that houses the Brita filter's so that he can run the water from the trap directly into a bucket or something like that.
The bucket, like behind
it? He hooks it up to his tap in his kitchen or his bathroom or whatever, right?
Whatever the water is coming from that he would, like, hooks it up like a python, like it's not hooked up all the time, just when he's changing the water?
Right, okay. Right. And then the water that comes out of it is ready for his tank. So he could hook it up to the tap and just set a bucket.
So it flows through the thing and it goes through a filter and then it goes in the tank.
Well, I don't know if he goes straight to his tank, but
okay. Well, he's got a video.
Well, he has a picture of it.
He said, well, some video links too. He says, right. I've attached some pictures and video links.
But the video is not of this.
Oh.
I still haven't
seen it. Send us a video. Send us a video, Gabriel.
Yeah, he has sort of sent us a picture, but I would like more information. Yeah. And a video would be a great way to do it. Just show us how it works and how we put it together. That would be awesome.
Sometimes I'm a little dense and I don't get things from verbal descriptions on papers. I gotta just see it.
Well, I looked at the picture and it gave me some idea, but I'd still like some elaboration. I'd still like some elaboration. I think it's a great idea. So thank you.
Sounds pretty nifty. He did send a video link of his 7.9 nano that convinced him to get back into the hobby. And also some pictures of the newest 55-gallon project.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. I think with the 7.9 nano, this is a great application for this sort of filter. Because a Brita filter, you know, you have to replace them after a certain number of gallons.
Mm-hmm.
So for getting water for his 55, it wouldn't be a practical solution, at least not for very long. You'd
have to go through the filter medium so fast.
Yeah. Or? And so it might, it would end up being kind of expensive. But for a small tank, it's a great, perfect way to do it. And even for a large tank, if you just need to do it once or twice within a short period of time, like a stopgap measure, it could work, you know, depending on how much water you need. But anyway, there we go. Great idea. And we will put his picture of his PVC Brita filter on the show page, as well as a picture of his 55, which is a really nice looking tank. I'll show it to you.
What does he have in there?
Well, mostly in the picture you can see the plants, but I like what he's done with it. And he's still working on it, but that's because he's a tinker at heart. And you can tell it's going to be growing out. It'll look really cool.
Okay, Kellyn Shrewsbury.
UK.
UK, yes. She says, thank you for your information about planet inverts.
That was the website about the shrimp.
That's right, and I almost read it again, thinking that it was a typo again.
Okay.
She says, this is very helpful. I thought you might like to see my 230-liter community tank, so here's a photo. I will send a short video separately.
And she did send a video. It was great. Her tank is a fun setup. It's got like a Buddha statue in the middle, and then it's got some greenish, like,
looks like
artificial obsidian, and then it's got the driftwood. That's my favorite bit.
The driftwood's really, really artistic.
It's some really nice driftwood.
Tank.
And then it's got moss that's starting to grow on the driftwood, and when it grows out, it's going to be absolutely stunning.
Very cool. Very pretty.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, she said that she's got guppies, 2 plecos, 4 corys, about 15 glow light tetras in there, and some shrimp, red cherry shrimp, but they're hiding.
Yes.
So you can't see them.
Okay.
So check those out on the show page, too. We'll put those there.
And then Michael asked you a question on YouTube,
and
he says, how do you dechlorinate your Daphnia water?
Okay. I use Prime. It works well for my Daphnia. I can put them in within an hour of using Prime, and they do fine. Of course, I think that's partly the strain of Daphnia that I have.
You've got pretty hardy Daphnia.
Yeah, they are supposedly, and I can't confirm this or deny it, supposedly were collected from the alligator pool at the Moscow Zoo sometime in the 70s or 60s or something originally, so they're pretty tough. Okay.
So that's all we do?
Yep,
okay.
Just Prime.
Alrighty, let's go on to Tom in Provo.
Cool.
He says, Russ Kelly and Aquarimaxers everywhere. I like that. That's a good beginning.
I do too.
I've noticed that aquarists usually refer to keeping fish in inverts as the hobby, as if there were only one hobby in the world, and that birding, knitting, base jumping, and golf were simply aberrant behaviors with a genetic etiology stemming from atomic bomb tests in the 1950s. It may well be true of golf, but that's a different rant.
Yes, I got quite a few chuckles out of that when I read it.
That's pretty good.
That was a good one.
So I'm thinking about where I'm heading with
the hobby.
I want to like put an echo on that. Hobby, hobby, hobby.
I can do that with
you do
audacity.
The
okay, you say it, and I'll put the echo.
You don't even need audacity.
No,
just do the echo.
The hobby, hobby, hobby. Is that what you meant?
Yes. Okay,
okay,
there we go. I need an approach somewhere between having a breeding tank, a grow-out tank, and a display tank, for each of the 32,500 species in fish base on one hand, and limiting myself to a shrimp and a nano tank on the other. My preferences are that the fish I work with be compatible with keeping a well-planted aquarium, do not require huge tanks, preferably 30 gallon or less, not be inordinately difficult to breed and care for, provide options beyond those commonly found in stores, are relatively natural, by which I mean they have not been inbred to produce grotesque finnage or garish colors.
Hmm.
I have concluded that Endler's live bearers and ziffs would be good choices as I expand from a single display tank to species tanks. I'm particularly interested in swordtails recently descended from wildcat, perhaps, and I don't remember how to say it.
Okay, well, it depends.
Zififerous?
Zififerous? Yes. Yeah, many
people
say that.
That's right. I liked that pronunciation because it sounds like fop, like they're going to be foppy fish, you know.
Yeah, some people say zipiferous, and I mean zifoporous. I said it backwards. People say it different ways, but I like the way you just said it.
We'll go with that.
And the species name?
Alvarezi.
Yeah, Alvarezi. There's a slight typo there, but yeah.
What do you think? Are my preferences reasonable? Are ziffs and endlers consistent with what I've outlined? Are there other species I should consider? I realize that I may be scorned by some for keeping beginner fish, but I'm willing to risk it. I only hope that gangs of cichlid and discus keepers don't steal my lunch money and give me wedgies.
I like that.
Maybe they would give you like a swirly instead. That's aquatic, right?
That works. That fits with the spirit of it for sure. Okay. Well, let's talk about some of these things. Okay. Well, certainly both species are compatible with a well-planted aquarium. No difficulties there. Do not require huge tanks. Well, the Endler's live bearers don't. The swordtails, they prefer larger tanks. I mean, 30 gallons would be probably adequate. I wouldn't really want to go a whole smaller than that.
How many swordtails could you put in 30 gallons?
Well, you could put probably a double breeding trio, like one male.
So like half a dozen.
I mean, two males and four females or something like that. And then some of their young, as they grow up, I mean, you can't keep them there with the adults, really, until they're a little older. You can put them back in. But they're larger fish in terms of live bears. You know, they're like on the sailfin molly side.
Right.
They're up
there. Something bigger would be preferable for them, depending on how many you want to keep.
I'm not saying you couldn't put them in a 30-gallon, but they do better and tend to grow larger and look better and get more fin development, which, of course, is important with swordtails, in a larger tank. But I'm not saying you couldn't do a few.
Okay.
In terms of not being inordinately difficult to breed and care for, I think you're right on the money there. Both of those species should be fine. Provide options beyond those commonly found in stores. Well, you usually won't find any swordtails beyond the run-of-the-mill Helleri or Helleri, you know, types in pet stores, generally, unless you have a specialist pet store that has, you know, they import live bearers or something like that. Yeah. Or they have special breeding program and they're hooked up with some breed or something like that. So in terms of that, probably fits the bill pretty well. Endlers are becoming a lot more common in pet stores, but there are lots of different varieties, I guess we can say, of endlers too, and some of them are more common than others. Some of them have probably been hybridized with guppies, unfortunately, although it's not too difficult to find pure lines, especially if you go online to specialists in endlers. You can find pure lines that haven't been mixed with guppies. They will mix with guppies, though, and it's almost inevitable that some of the older strains in the hobby are probably
mixed,
some of them anyway. So I would say if you go online to a reputable breeder, you're probably safe there. And then in terms of relatively natural, I mean, they've already started to, like I was saying, separate these certain variants of Endler's live bearers, and they're less variable in coloration than guppies. Just by nature, they seem to be, and it's easier to fix a strain. And so there's probably less of the inbreeding going on by that, from that standpoint, and also the fact that they've just been in the hobby less time.
And they haven't had enough time to be messed with.
So I would still say, compared to guppies, they're still relatively natural, but there has been some selective breeding going on, probably more so than any of the swordtails beyond the Helleri. And certainly, you know, the run-of-the-mill swordtails you find in the pet store, the Helleri, are not even one species anymore. They've been mixed with at least two species of Pleti.
Oh, wow.
Probably both species of Pleti, to a greater or lesser extent. So, and the same as with putties, they have swordtail genes in them. So those are mixed up. But if you go with Alvarezza, you're probably fine. I don't think you need to worry about that. So I would say they fit the bill pretty well. That looks like you've done some good research there, and your preferences are pretty reasonable, yeah.
Maybe slightly leaning towards the Endlers, just because of tank size, unless he decides to go up.
Or? Well, if he's on the high end, if mm-hmm. he's, you know, more at the 29-30 end rather than the 10-20 end, mm-hmm. he can probably get away with some. In terms of breeding, though, I mean, Endlers are not, they will probably eat some of their fry, but I imagine they're kind of like guppies in that they'll eat some, but you can keep them in a community and you'll still get fry. I mean, I've seen communities of Endlers like that. But swordtails tend to eat most of their fry.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't kept swordtails in a number of years, but when I did, very few, there were some fry that survived in community tanks, but it was very few, maybe one or two per spawn. And it would vary, of course, on the community, what you're keeping in it, how well they're fed, what sort of plant cover they have, and all those variables. But you're not going to get a very high yield if you're just keeping them in a tank and letting them breed. You really need to pull the females a couple of weeks before they give birth, put them in a nice, spacious tank with a heavy plant cover, and then once they give birth, pull them back out, put back in the in the community tank. And then once the babies have put on a month or two of growth, then you can put them back in.
They're too big to eat.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And that's, I mean, so that's an added dimension of difficulty, I suppose, if you want to get any sort of yield out of the swordtails. But hopefully that gives a little bit of an idea of how that works. Did I miss anything there?
I think that's it.
I pretty much cover it?
Yeah. Okay. Good luck with the discus keepers.
Yeah, just don't tell them, no. No, I don't think there really should be anybody making fun of people for their choices of fish. I mean, I've kept fish for a long time.
I mean, maybe if you're talking about dog breeding and somebody's got like a little yappy thing, you can maybe pick on them, but not for fish.
I don't know. I tend to gravitate towards some of the easy fish. Not just, I mean, I've picked up some other fish a little more challenging over the years too, but a lot of the fish we have are just, you know, simple fish. I know Kelly's favorite fish, if she had to pick one, would just be goldfish. Yeah. Fancy goldfish.
Yeah.
And
well, you know, I will tell you a thing. And I think this can spread across lots of disciplines, but I, past fish keeping, outside of our fishy lives, I dance. And I would much rather, watching other dancers, I would much rather see someone do what is considered more of a basic move or a simple move, but do it well and do it with, you know, a full range of motion and expression and really be dancing instead of just doing a move, than I would rather see somebody do something crazy and complicated but not do it very well or look like a robot while they're doing it.
No, I see what you're saying.
And so beginner fish, that's kind of a, like you said, it's a silly thing to say. Keep the fish that you like and keep them well and make them look fabulous.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think anybody has room to make fun of you, Tom. I think I'd much rather see that too. And if I walk into someone's house and I see a tank of discus and the discus are healthy, but the tank is not as exciting, you know, it's just a stark breeder tank. I will admire the fact that they're breeding the discus. I think that's awesome. I will be fascinated, in fact, by the whole process. I'll ask them all sorts of questions. I'd talk about it. We could probably talk for hours, and I'd be fascinated by the whole thing. But there's an added dimension if you walk into someone else's house, and let's say they just have a few fancy goldfish in a tank, but their tank has been put together in a way that it's just stunning. Now, not just me as a fish keeper, as an aquarist who's interested in fish, will look at that tank and say, wow. You know, anybody would look at that tank and say, wow, and ask them lots of questions and be interested in it. Whereas, you know, walking into that tank with the discus, I would be interested, but you might not be as interested and might say, oh, look, that's cool, they got discus, but the tank doesn't look cool, so it doesn't draw your attention. But the tank
is boring, so I don't
want to look at it, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, I agree with you. It's kind of like what you were saying with dancing, and it's true with so many other things.
If you put your heart into it, it makes a big difference. That sounds cheesy and corny, and here I am not being goofy, and I'm going to sound like a dweeb, but that's okay. Mm. But it's true.
Yep, yep. So, yeah, I'd love to see what you decide to set up. Oh, there was one thing I was going to say, though. In terms of saying other species you should look into, well, in a word, yes. Not that you shouldn't do what you're saying, but there are so many other species to consider too. I mean, you could look into some of the rainbows, some of the smaller rainbow fish. They're very fascinating. There are some of them that are not very popular in pet stores because when you look at them in the pet store, they tend to be gray. Or
they color up when you get them home.
Yeah, a silver, and they tend to be immature ones. And you bring them home, and you let them mature, and the males really color up for the females and so on. And a lot of the females can be, you know, fairly beautiful too, although the males are usually more colorful. But rainbow fish can be good. I know that you've asked us questions about some of the micro-resboras and things like that. Some of the other danios can be fabulous too, some of the ones you see less often in the hobby and not often in the pet store. I'm not talking about like zebra danios or leopard danios or things like that. Some of the other less commonly kept ones can be very interesting. So there are lots of other species. And out of the 32,500 on FishBase, we could probably come up with several thousand that fit the criteria you mentioned. So I would say, yeah, there are a lot, but I'm not sure how much we can go into them right now. But just, yeah, keep your options open, but go with something that's interesting to you. And if these two are interesting to you, I'd say go for it. Probably not try them together because the swordtails will eat any endless fry you get, almost certainly. But I didn't think you were planning on actually doing them together, but there you go. And I think that's about it. Good luck. Welcome to all our new contributors for today. And until next week,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.